So let's continue in Colossians. We're in the first chapter. It seems like we're not going to get through the first chapter. I mean, the rapture is going to occur before we get to chapter 2, probably. We're going to start on verse 15. We're only going to do 3 verses today. I suspect that we will be done early, but usually my suspicions are not accurate. So, but we're going to do 3 verses today in Colossians chapter 1. This is part 3 of this study. There are some questions that all humans have to answer in their own mind. Sometimes people don't answer them, but they have to come to some resolution or at least ask the questions in their mind before they die. At least if you get to a certain age, generally you ask these questions. How did the earth become? How did it become what it is today? How was it created or evolve? How did this place become what we see today? The second question is, why am I here? Why are we here? The next one is, what's my purpose in life? What was I put on earth to fulfill? Why am I here? What is my purpose? And the last question is, who is Jesus and what will I do with him? These are questions that everybody must face at some point in their life if they live past the age of childhood. They will probably come across all of these questions. Why is the earth here? What caused this earth to become what it is? Why am I here? What's my purpose? And who is Jesus? A little bit more specific question that some Christians or pseudo-Christian cults like to ask is, what is the Trinity? Is it taught in the Bible? Is the actual word Trinity used? No. But what we see is that phrasing that describes the Son and the Spirit are words that only could describe God. So what is the Trinity? Do we believe in the Trinity? In these next 3 verses, we're going to see all of these answers answered. We're going to see all of these questions answered, I should say. All of these questions, these humongous, difficult questions that everyone faces, we're going to see answers to those questions in these 3 verses. Let's start with verse 15. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. As I was reading through this week in the scripture, a Christmas song kept coming up in my head. It's a Wesley Christmas carol, "Veiled in Flesh, the Godhead See." It kind of talks about the Trinity, the God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. But in this sense, it's talking about veiled in flesh, the Godhead See. It's talking about God being seen in flesh. And as we take a look at verse 15, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. He is the image of God. Paul is making it very clear in this letter that he wants the believers to grow up in the way that they see Jesus. Everything that we've led up to by now, if you've been here for all the studies or if you've read Colossians, you see that Paul's point is he wants the Colossians to grow up in their faith. And in order to grow up, you have to view Christ appropriately, accurately. And the first thing he says is that Christ is the image of God. And as these guys are stumbling around trying to figure out their Christian walk, which is pretty close to what some of us are doing in our lives right now. The Colossians were struggling through their walk, trying to figure out where to go, where God wanted them to be, what to believe. He says, Jesus is the image of God. So the biggest factor in maturing is to keep a correct view of Jesus Christ. If you want to be mature in your faith, in your Christian walk, you have to keep an accurate view of who Christ is. At this point in history, we talked about Colossae or Colossae, however they say it, and we looked at a map a month or so ago about the different places in the Asian area, where they call it Asia back then, not quite Asia now, but it's Turkey, where we consider modern-day Turkey. But at that time, there were many false teachers who wanted to change people's perspective of who Jesus was. Many of the believers out there today, or I should say false teachers out there today, struggle with the same issue. They want to say, well, Jesus was a great teacher. He was a good man. He was a loving person. He was a great philosopher. There are a lot of different names that the world gives Jesus that are quite respectful, maybe honoring. But the problem is they're missing the fact that he is God. He is the image of God on earth. They'll talk about how great and awesome of a person he was, but they come short of acknowledging that he is the image of God. He is the only image that we have of God on earth, physically on earth. This text brings people back to reality. If you look at verse 15 one more time, it says, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. It says that he is the image of God. In this text, we see some very powerful statements. I think if once we get through these three verses, you're going to see three things that come up, and none of them should be taken lightly. I read through these three verses probably 100 times this week, and it wasn't until I started looking at them closely that it was like, whoa, there's some amazing statements in these three verses. And I came up with three. We see that Jesus is the image of God. The second one is that his work as the creator, we see that he's a creator of all things. And the third thing is that he has a relationship with the world that he created. So each one of these three things we're going to take a look at. Number one, he is the image of God. Number two, he is the creator. And number three, he has relationship with his creation. All right, so these are the three points that we're going to talk about today in these three verses. So if you're taking notes, that'd be good. Now let's go back to the image aspect. What does it mean that Jesus is the image of God, of the invisible God? So I came across this story of this boy who was in Sunday school, and he was drawing a picture, and the Sunday school teacher said, well, what are you drawing? And he goes, I'm drawing a picture of God. And he was pretty certain that this was going to be a picture of God. And the teacher goes, well, that can't be true. That nobody knows what God looks like. How do you know that? And he said, they will after they see this. This is what God looks like, right? So you have this idea of this kid who, you know, how does he know? But he was sure that once they saw this, everything would be cleared up and this would be the answer to everybody's question. But this is kind of like what Jesus was. Jesus is a picture that was drawn for us of what God looks like, how God behaves, how he treats people. And because of Jesus, we know what he looks like. We know how he acts. And we can come to God when we come to Jesus. Now, the second part of this verse has some interesting debate over what it means. So the next part, let's take a look at this. So he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. So the firstborn means also could mean supremacy and rank. So this describes a person of higher rank or higher authority than in relation to other people. So the best way to determine which meaning that this is referring to is to look at the context. What is it saying in context? So it could mean that he was the first child to be born from a set of parents, or it could mean that he has control or supremacy or authority over something, over creation in this sense. So let's take a look at verse 16. Four is kind of a connecting word, isn't it? It's kind of like therefore means you got to see why what it's there for, right? So verse 15, it says, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, For he's got younger siblings. Is that, no, it doesn't say that. It says, for all things in heaven and on earth were created by him. All things, whether visible or invisible, whether thrones or dominions, whether principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. Does that sound like birth order to you? It doesn't sound like birth order to me at all. It sounds like this is talking about authority, his rank, his supremacy. The head, as Val said, he's the head over all of creation. So we got to be very careful when we look at Scripture to look at it in context and not pull out of it, well, Jesus was born because he was the firstborn, so it must mean that he was created, which must mean that he's not God, because he just said that he is the image of God. So we got to see what the four is there for. This has nothing to do with creation order. It has to do with his rule over the creation. He was the creator of all things and the purpose of it as well. Not the first one to be created, but the one ruling over creation. So we see many times on earth that Jesus actually had control over the creation, don't we? We see that the first miracle, his first miracle, was turning water into wine, right? So we see that he used a part of nature and created or did a miracle with that natural element. Okay. We also see that he multiplied fish and bread, things that were part of creation. He multiplied it. We also see, to feed a few thousand people, he also controlled the wind. When they were on the boat and it was, you know, he rebuked the wind. He had control over the wind. He also had control over the fish when he said, now throw your nets on the other side, right? Oh, this guy has control over the fish. We also see that he has, he can walk on water, and he can help others to walk on water. He can command others to walk on water. So we see that we're not talking about someone who was created, who was the first thing to be created. We are talking about someone who has authority over creation. So he is the ruler over nature. Let's go through verse 16 one more time. For all things in heaven and on earth were created by him, all things whether visible or invisible, whether thrones or dominions, whether principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. So it's more than just the things that we can see. This is where I had to step back and go, what did I just read? Because I see things in front of me. I'm a very literal person. I see 1 + 1, and I think it equals 2. And so I look at everything that's in front of me, and that's my reality. But there's more to reality than just what I can see. It says visible and invisible. Thrones or dominions, whether principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. So everything that exists. And one of the interesting points is that Ray Stedman pointed the fact out that it's not just the things that we can see, it's the concepts and the attitudes that were also created by God through Jesus or for Jesus. And one of the points that he brought up was through the concepts and attitudes, we understand grace, mercy, truth, and love, and many, many, many other things. He originated those things. Those are unseen concepts that we can't hold in our hand, but we can experience them. There are concepts that are invisible concepts, kind of like the wind. You don't see the wind, but you see the effects of the wind. Just like that, you understand the concepts, the attitudes of the invisible things. Those are from God. Those are originated through Jesus. Attitudes and concepts. And then we see that he mentions thrones, rulers, powers, authorities are all under his authority. This is one hard one to swallow. Especially when you're this or that party and the other party's in charge and all the other thing, and you think, how, that person's not, that can't be right. Or if you're in a dictatorship where there's a crazy lunatic running the place and you think, well, this can't be God's will. But he has power over all of it. And in the end, it's all going to be part of his plan. It's all part of the plan that God has for the future of the world. And we don't understand it because we don't see the whole thing. But he does. He sees from beginning to end. He's outside of that time frame. He sees the whole picture. We don't. But that's something to keep in mind. He is over the powers, the thrones, the rulers, the authorities of this world. He's over top of all of that. He is the Lord of Lords. One of the beliefs that was popular in Colossae at the time was that the world was ruled by a hierarchy of angels. And this was interesting. When I was reading through some of the commentaries, they brought up this fact that there was this belief that there was a hierarchy of angels. And on the bottom were the angels that were kind of the rough around the edges. They were unrefined. They're not the nice angels with the white robe and the wings, right? The ones that we picture with the halo. These are the angels that are a little rough, you know, they're kind of not quite up to the standard. But then they work their way up the hierarchy until you get to be the top of the pyramid. And this is what they thought. And it was all angel-centered. It was all centered around angels. And they thought that if the angels were good enough, they'd work their way up, and it took many, many years. And this theory that happened, that they believed in, kind of led to the current idea of reincarnation with us at this day and age. We see a lot of other world religions that believe in reincarnation. If you're good, you could end up being a better life in the next life, and if you're bad, you could be a cow, or you know, end up to be a worm or a snake, or whatever. I don't know all the different layers of. I think Hinduism does that and that kind of stuff. But they had a similar view of angels, and they were in charge of what was going on in the world. Paul's trying to clear up this heresy. There's no hierarchy of angels that are running the show here. It's Jesus. He's overseeing everything. It was created by him and for him. He oversees everything. And I think one of the things that I forget, and maybe you forget this too, is that in my life, I think, well, there are demon behaviors going on. There are demons out there that are running rampant all over the planet. But this is part of God's plan. It's not like the demons are going to change the outcome of God's plan. They're allowed to run because this is the time when they're allowed to run wild. Just like it says that Satan is the prince of the power of the air. Well, he hasn't been, he's been restrained, but he's not being thrown in the dungeon yet. What do they call it in Revelation? The abyss. He hasn't been thrown in the abyss yet. That's going to happen. But right now, it looks like he's running the place. And I get lost in the fact that this world is so corrupt. Everything is corrupt. Everyone is corrupt. There's nobody out there that, you know, that are, and then I remember, you know what? That's part of God's plan. And I need to trust him that in the end, it's his plan. And I will be with him in the end. And I have the hope and the comfort now to know that in the end, I will be with him. I won't be here with all of these crazy kings and presidents and dictators and all this stuff and lost in all of this. I bet you Nikki probably has some crazy stories about the politics. Just a few that you mentioned a couple months ago, the crazy political stuff and probably demonic behavior in the jungles and that kind of stuff. I think Micah said one time, in the U.S., the problem is we don't believe in anything. We don't believe in God. We don't believe in hell. We don't believe in the devil. We don't believe in anything. The problem in South America is they believe in everything, and Satan's all over the place, acting out all over the place. And so you've probably got stories and heard stories from other people. Satan is around, but we need to have trust that the Lord is in control of everything. And Joan's reading the end of it now with her middle school girls. In the end, God wins. You're going through Revelation, right? And in the end, God wins. Keep our focus on the fact that he is over everything and his plan will happen. And what Paul is trying to do is to clarify that heresy. And we could do the same now. People believe in reincarnation. People believe in nothing. Like the world is just a spontaneous combustion of atoms. And I don't even know what craziness that they believe out there. But they think that this all happened by chance or by mistake. And that there's no real order. There's no authority other than what we see. What you see is reality. There's nothing up above. There's nobody dictating anything. There's no God. And you're here by sheer accident or by sheer chance that the atoms exploded the right way and evolved into you. And you have no meaning, you have no purpose, and you have nothing to look forward to after death. That's what the world teaches. That's what the world would say. Paul is saying, no, Jesus is in control of everything. This should give us assurance. That's one of the reasons why I picked blessed assurance, because this should give us assurance. Jesus is in control. He made everything, and it's, everything was made for him, and he has authority over it all. We should have boldness, clarity of our salvation. Let's go ahead and move on to the last verse, verse 17. He himself is before all things, and all things are held together in him. Again, it points out his control. This tells us he controls everything. He was there before creation. He is over creation. He is the king of it. He holds it all together. And ultimately, he's the master. One of the stories that came up that I'm very familiar with this story because I've heard it told by a lot of teachers and preachers and that kind of thing. And it's the story of the rich young ruler. There was a rich young ruler. Obviously, he's wealthy. He's young, probably good looking. He'd be in the People magazine. If he wasn't married, he'd be one of the most eligible bachelors because he's rich and he's young and he's powerful and he's got all, you know, he's what everybody wanted to be. Maybe still wants to be this in this day and age, the rich young ruler. But when he approached Jesus, he had an emptiness. He had an area of his heart that was not fulfilled. And when he saw Jesus, he could see the truth in Jesus. And he knew that this man was more than just a man, more than just a good teacher. And in the end, Jesus told him to sell all your possessions and give the money to the poor. And this is where that's where the preacher stops and it's like, okay, money is bad and we got to give it all to the poor, some sort of social justice thing. But I don't think that's where the story ends. I think that if you look at it closely, Jesus had close friends that were rich, tax collectors. He had other people that dealt with money, and he never rebuked them for having wealth. I think the problem with this young man, this young ruler, was that that one detail got in the way of his trusting Jesus and accepting Jesus for who he was. And so Jesus, knowing this, knowing I created this person, this rich young ruler, I know what his weakness is. It's that his money is more important than me. Now, selling all of his possessions and giving all of it to the poor is a great thing to do. Probably would have been a lovely thing to do. And I'm not saying that that's what you guys need to do or not need to do, but whatever is getting in the way of you trusting the Lord, whatever is hindering your relationship with him is the important thing. In the end, Jesus was recognizing what was keeping the rich young ruler from trusting him. So Jesus wanted him to get rid of whatever was not allowing him to trust completely in him. The money is immaterial. And in the end, Jesus' goal was to make himself the king in that kid's life, that young ruler's life. Make him the ruler. Make him the Lord. Make him the master. I know master and slave has a bad connotation, but we're going to get into that next week when we get into verse 18 through 20 about the head, the master, the person who's in control. Jesus wants to be in control. And if you look at the rich young ruler, his problem was that the money controlled him. It wasn't that he was rich that was bad. It was because the money was more important. Jesus brought it to a question. Is the money more important than spiritual fulfillment and salvation and a relationship with God? Jesus isn't looking for you to give all your money to the poor. He wants himself to be the master in your life, just like he is the master of creation. This is why so many are lost and wandering around today, because they don't want to give up whatever it is, whether it be drugs, whether it be drinking, whether it be money, it could be food. It could be food. That's a big one for me and a lot of my family, is food. Is that the master of your life? What is it? Television, internet, gambling? There's a lot of different things that we could replace Jesus with in our lives that could be holding us away from Jesus. Just like the rich young ruler's problem was his money. It wasn't a problem that he had it. It was a problem that if it came between the two things, he'd rather have the money. Because the money is something that you can see. You can touch it. Jesus created the things that are visible and invisible. He knows what our heart is and what's keeping us from him. People nowadays, people in this day and age, need a master. That's the problem. When I see people walking and I watch people on TV, they look depressed. They look sad. They talk depressing. They talk negatively. Why is that? Because they have a void in their life. They have no acknowledgement of the one who created them, the one who created everything. And I think that in the end, we all need a master. We need someone to follow. We need someone to lean on. We need someone to have created us, to have given us purpose. We need authority to follow. An assurance that there is someone ruling the affairs of my life in addition to the affairs of the world. So I ask you, we go back to those few questions that I asked you at the beginning. I'll start with the last one. Who is Jesus? Do you have a master in your life? A ruler? An authority that is guiding and comforting your life? Do you acknowledge that you were created for something, for someone, and by someone? You were made for him, and he is there for you. That's one of the major things that we forget, is that he wasn't just made for us on the cross. He didn't just die for us. We were made for him. And it says that. It says in verse 16, all things were created through him and for him. You have a purpose, and that is for him, to have relationship with him, to acknowledge his power, his authority, everything that he's done. That is your purpose. So I go back to those few questions. Who is Jesus? We just asked that one. What is your purpose? Your purpose is to live for him, acknowledge him, have relationship with him. Why are we here? What is the meaning of life? Well, we're his creation. And we're here to display the love and the grace of God. And wherever we're at in the world, that is our purpose. And I go back to the mission statement that we've been mulling over the last couple months. The grace of God through Jesus Christ, taught and lived. That is our purpose. Our purpose is to display God's love. And how did the earth become? That is the first question I asked. How did the earth become? God created it. It wasn't just a spontaneous combustion of molecules and atoms and explosion of whatever craziness that just happened to happen, like by chance, one out of a bazillion chance that this happened. No, there was intention. There was creative, intelligent design in you and the world that we live in. It's lofty, you know, it's easy to read all of these lofty things, to skim through these verses without really looking at them. And understanding, maybe you can have a small understanding of the power, the authority that this man had. But as we look into that side of Jesus, we sometimes forget the other side of Jesus, is that this is the same guy who hung on the cross. This is the same guy who was whipped, beaten, and ultimately died in my place. The same guy who created everything and why we're created and for the reason that we were created, he created everything in the world. He has power over everything, all the rulers, the kings, all this stuff, the presidents. He was the same guy who hung on the cross for you. He had complete control, and yet he went to the cross to bear our sins. This is the same guy. These humongously different things are the same person, the same guy. That is a picture of love. Those questions that I asked, how did the earth become? Why are we here? What's our purpose? And who is Jesus? All three verses, or these three verses, answer all of those questions. Everything we experience here was created by Jesus. We were created by Jesus, and we were created for Jesus. And Jesus is our picture of who God is. If you want to know who God is, you got to get to know who Jesus is. So the last question that I have is, what will you do with Jesus? How will you respond? John 3:18, the only thing that our salvation hinges upon is, do you believe or do you not believe? And that's ultimately what will decide your relationship with God, is your belief or disbelief in Jesus. What will you do with Jesus?